Three newborn puppies nestle together, finding warmth on one of the coldest days of the year. The mom is never far away.
She likes to stay with them most of the time. There's a caribou skin in there. She likes to put her leg over top of them and keep them warm. And she tends to them when they're whining a lot. It's really cute.
These are some of the newest arrivals in Rankin Inlet, a community that sits on the icy shores of the Hudson Bay. And they're the newest members of Sophia Johnston's dog team. The team sees Sophia coming a mile away. Tethered to their tiny insulated doghouses, they create the slightest contrast on a mostly white horizon. And they are eager to greet their handler.
Okay, they're spread out just enough so they can't reach each other because they like to get tangled. But from where we're standing, farthest to the right, there's Buddy. She's really energetic. The next one over is Bullum. And he's very affectionate. He loves to hug everybody. The middle one is Gangudak. That means shy. She's very skittish and likes her alone time, but she likes the other dogs. The second last one on the left is Buyuk, which is Big Smoke because she's big and she's like grayish, really dark gray. She's really friendly and she listens very well too. And the last one to the left is Ukluk, which Ukluk or something. That means grizzly bear, and he's very big and strong, and he runs around a lot.
Sophia travels by snowmobile to attend to her dogs each day, even amidst a blizzard or worse, a pile of homework. At 15 years old, she is one of the youngest mushers in town and one of the only ones. Dog sledding is losing popularity in northern communities like this, and many fear that a disappearance of dog teams means a loss of Inuit culture. But Sophia says there is still hope to keep the tradition alive.
I think it's good because I'm young and I still love it, I think I could get a couple more people interested in it. It won't be the same, but I believe it's important to keep it going.
Ublukut, Dungahugi, hello and welcome. This is Unreserved. I'm Juanita Taylor in for Rosanna Deerchild. At just 15 years old, Sophia Johnston is pursuing her dream of becoming a dog musher while helping preserve a proud Inuit tradition.
It represents a lot of the hardships of being an Inuk and how they had to use their dogs and go hunting and stuff.
And John McLeod learned everything he knows about dog teams from Inuit elders. He says the dogs are intertwined with traditional knowledge and teach you everything you need to know about living off the land.
We've made caribou windpan. The lines for the dogs is seal skin, right? Like, and all that is because we have dogs.
Plus, inspired by the world-famous dog races in the Yukon, Harry Tautungi helped organize some of the first races his community had seen in decades. They brought people from all over the Arctic together.
We did it. People from Nayat, Iqaluit, Iqaluit, Baker Lake, Chesterfield, Wilco, Yellowknife. They all came in like that was about 32 teams or something.
Welcome to Rankin Inlet, Gangatlinet, just one of the places I call home, and where community members are working to keep Inuit traditions alive. For many, that means a deep commitment to dog sled teams, the ever-dependable Qimmeet. Well, every hamlet needs a mayor, and here in Rankin Inlet, that happens to be my hakik, my father-in-law, Harry Tautungi. In addition to his work as a community builder and entrepreneur, Harry was a longtime musher. He was born near Arvet and grew up in Whale Cove. When he moved to Rankin Inlet at the age of 14, there weren't any dog teams around. That is, until about 1979. It's a significant moment in time because that's when CB radios were introduced to many households. And those radios were the spark that brought dog teams back to Rankin.
We always want to have something to do. And one thing was, everybody had a CB radio. Everybody had a nickname.
What was your nickname?
Different people, different nicknames. I had a nickname from my bio father, which was Sagatito, but my older brother changed that to 72, just because it rhymes. But we all had nicknames. Different people had nicknames from their memories from the past. They had nicknames for each other, some of them funny, and some of them would start with their nicknames and fight about them, like play arguing on CB, let's say. And it used to be interesting. You'd get up like 6 in the morning, turn your CB on, and you're listening to these elders that are telling stories about their past and present and funny stuff and serious stuff. And it was like an everyday radio show. And from that, for some reason or another, they started talking about dog teams. We used to do this, we used to do that, we used to race. I remember the first time we raced, and I won a 22, and they started talking, we should start having dogs again over here. That would be fun. People started collecting dogs around town. Some guys had 2 tall dogs, a couple really small ones, and any kind of fur, like different colors. We started organizing a little race. That would be probably 4-mile race. And you get to see all kinds of dogs. Like, let's say there were 7 teams. No 2 dogs were the same, pretty much. So that's how it's kind of started again. And we decided we could have a big race here in Rankin like they do in Yellowknife and some other places. Now, we thought we could do it, but we did it. We had Hugh Angangai, David Deluyuk, my wife, fundraising for that race, and they raised $50,000.
That was pretty big back in those days.
That was a big money, and people from Nayat, Igloolik, Arvet, Baker Lake, Chesterfield, Wilco, Rankin, Yellowknife, they all came in. Like, there was about 32 teams or something, and there was a big crowd at, we call it Ichiwe, which is the other part of this little inlet. And there was a lot of people there, a lot of dogs, different. And some of us were still using the dogs we found on the street. Or near the dump or someplace or somebody's garbage. I remember an elder saying that the hounds that came in from Yellowknife, he looked at the dogs and he said, "These dogs will never go 50 miles. They're going to starve if they're like skinny. They'll never make it." We had no idea how fast they go. We had no idea how far they can run. Like, run 50 miles at, I don't know, 16 to 18 miles an hour. We were just so far behind. It was funny. Like, we were laughing at ourselves. What are we doing racing with these guys?
So what were the races like back then?
If you look at some pictures, you'll see a lot of people watching the race, helping with the race. All the communities in Givaldat were there every year. And the races were like fun because we never really knew who was going to win because the Yellowknife guys didn't come all the time. So when it's only local and Givaldat mute, it used to be, really wondering who's going to do it, who's got a secret or whatever. But the races were like amazing time of our life for that time.
So it was very popular back then. What made you want to be a racer?
my attitude and competitiveness. I don't know what it is. It's just something I kind of know something about as growing up. The one thing I started was I started hunting with my dogs. That was almost more fun than racing because you're getting ready to be independent for four or five days within your sled, and your dogs are there, and your dog food and your tent, or what we used to mostly do would build an igloo, sleep there. But before that, there used to be ghosts there.
Ghosts?
I used to believe in ghosts like everybody else when I was a kid. And I couldn't sleep out there alone. But with dogs, I could do it. Like the dog will tell me when the ghost comes around or the bear or whatever. Right? So, but once you get into that, like, it's hard to concentrate on almost anything else, like work or whatever. But my heart was into it. All the guys that were here, they're really into it. There was almost nothing else in life. Like, that was before we had our arena too. So we were really into it. Like, we were into it. Like, we're into hockey now when we're young.
When did you first start working with dogs and dog teams?
The first bunch of dogs that I had were five dogs. Ding and Ding and Pepsi and Kimayo. I remember my first dog when I was 14 years old, or 13 years old in Wilco. My brother had dogs, but he left to work in Linden Lake, and he left me his dog. I just used to run with them, just run along with me and walk anywhere. But I got a guy called, his name was Buckshot Engneguluk. He had a team, so we put our teams together, and we started running dogs, like actually really running dogs. And
was he the one who taught you how to run dogs?
He taught me quite a bit how to get, like, one of the things was two dog teams getting together, get into a big fight. And one of them was trying to break that up. But he taught me how to make harnesses, dog strings out of ugjuk skins, chew them and make them soft.
And ugjuk is a bearded seal.
Yeah, bearded seal, yeah. So that's how I kind of started. That was in 1970. That's when I started learning how to actually run dogs. And
so for people who might not know the history of keeping dog teams, what were the teams used for?
Some guys used them for caribou hunting. Us, in that era, we were mostly seal hunting for our dogs and for our families. We were going to the floe edge and stuff like that.
This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Juanita Taylor, in for Rosanna Deerchild. My guest today is Harry Tautungi, who started mushing in the 80s when dog teams returned to Rankin Inlet. Dog teams were absent from communities for many years, in large part because of government efforts to eradicate traditional Inuit ways of life. One of the most horrific examples of this was the dog call, or what people around here call the dog slaughter. During the 1950s and 60s, police officers and other authorities in Nunavik killed over 1,000 Qimmit.
People were coming into town, different regions too, like up here. Some people would go back to the closest community to get their supplies for the summer before they couldn't use their sleds and dogs anymore. So what happened to some of the, what I've heard is they come into the community, the dog gets killed off by the RCMP, the federal agents. And how hard that must be. Like, you get stuck till somebody with a boat decides to take you back to your camp. That's your only way to get back to your camp. And there's a lot of stories like that, but
Did it happen here in the Rankin area?
I've heard it happen here in Rankin, right, with probably four teams that I heard about. Because this is just stories when we were out in the land, we're in the igloo or a cabin, we're talking like that, and really, like, I couldn't believe, but people would come here, they come here to work in the mine, and the dog would get shot up.
Well, how were people still able to carry on the tradition of dog mushing after that dog call, do you know?
No, it was down for a long time, probably into the early 80s when we started getting into this racing thing. Mm-hmm. Soon as the Ski-Doo came around, that was kind of it, till the Seabees came back around here, and we started talking about dog teams again. It actually really came back big for a while. It was a big deal, and government was actually involved in helping getting teams from out of the community to here to support a little bit. And of course, the airlines supported and sponsored a few teams to come here. So it was pretty good to see for a while. It was an exciting time in our lives, some of us mushers anyway, and people too. Like one musher would have big extended family members that are helping or flying to help, use, visit, stuff like that. And it was a good thing. And I think, in a way, we sparked the mushing community in the Baffin and Quebec from the start with CB, talking about it, doing it, having a prize of a 22 single-shot rifle. And that's how it started.
Can you talk about just why today, Qimuksiq dog team mushing, why it's not as common or why it's not as popular today as it used to be?
Because I'm a leftover, like I'll say, leftover guy. They all died off. They're all gone. Like there used to be 30 teams there. There's probably two or three of us left that were in that area with the dog. They're all gone. Mm-hmm. They just got old and passed on.
But I still wonder why it hasn't been passed on. Tough question, yeah. Maybe there's not, one answer to that.
Yeah. One of the things is other stuff were coming up too, like hockey, other sports where you don't freeze your whatever every time you cross.
What do you miss the most about being a dog musher? Because you did it for so many years, but you've had to stop in recent years. But what do you miss the most about being a dog racer?
My friends that I got to know all over Canada, especially my Cree friends and my old friends that used to be here. It's hard to believe how I was driving from Saskatoon to Winnipeg to pick up dog food with a trailer. I had 10,000 pounds of dog food. I know, I even remember the places like Starbuck, Manitoba, and Baldwin Feeds, Manitoba, somewhere down there. And I'd go there, pick up 10,000 pounds of meat for the winter and drive back. And one day we're going down to near Russell, Manitoba, I think, Russell. Mm-hmm. We're going down that big valley and we seen one of our trailer wheels passing us. But we got to the bottom of the hill. We lost our wheel for a while, but we found it. But we left half of our load over there. And in a matter of a day, one of our mushing friends picked up all that leftover dog food like this. Like that's how the family, dog mushing family, got to be with. I learned how to be a friend with helpful friends and people. Got to know a lot of people, and that's what I kind of missed the most. That the story I told you, those stories used to come out. They wouldn't come out if we went to a dance or whatever. But dog mushing, a lot of stories came out that I never would have thought of or never would have known about. But that's what I missed the most. Is. And believe me, I travel all over. I went to Yellowknife from Saskatchewan. I went to Black Lake, Wollaston Lake, Pelican Narrow, all those communities. Some of them don't have hotels. They just let us have a room or whatever. And that's what I missed, the friendship and the I don't know what the word. Yeah, that, and it feels like an emptiness, but life goes on.
Harry Tautungi is Inuk and was a dog musher for about 30 years. He lives in Rankin Inlet. And that's where I am today for Unreserved. We're coming to you on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, US Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Juanita Taylor, in for Rosanna Deerchild. We'll head back on the sea ice with Sophia Johnston and her dog sled team in just a few minutes, but first, some music. The Cherry Cans make their music out of their hometown of Iqaluit, Nunavut. Many of their songs are sung in Inuktitut and feature throat singing, like this one, Ukiuk, which in Inuktitut means winter. That is the Cherry Cans with Ukiuk. Let's head back out onto the sea ice where Sophia is harnessing the energy of her young team.
Okay, I'm gonna start harnessing them up.
The dogs pull Sophia on a kick sled. Think water skiing, but on ice, with two skis and a sled.
Okay, how should I sit? This way or facing that way?
My producer Kim climbs on board to gather some sounds of that sled gliding across the ice and snow.
Got it.
Sophia's dad Kyle is on the snowmobile just ahead, helping the dogs stay on course.
Awesome.
So we're going to go and see John McLeod now.
As we wrap up our time with Sophia and the crew, Kyle tells us our next interview is just a short snowmobile ride away. So I hop on my snowmobile,
yeah.
And Kim sets up behind me and holds on for dear life.
Hi.
And we're on our way across the ice to John McLeod's. John is an important part of Sophia's dog team story. Her first six dogs were a gift from him. Before that, Sophia and her friend Braylon Ayaguak would head out to John's cabin often after school to visit with him and his dog team. John's cabin sits on the outskirts of town, powered by solar panels. In the winter, it's accessible only by snowmobile.
Eat, have some tea, warm up.
It's warm in here, a welcome reprieve from all our time on the sea ice. John started running dog teams in the 1980s, left for a time, and returned after retirement from teaching. John isn't Indigenous. He says he learned everything he knows from Inuit elders in the community. And now he's teaching younger people, like Sophia, her friend Braylon Ayaguak, and John's nephew, Tristan Diaz.
Well, this is really cozy in here. It was quite the ride to come here on the sea ice by snowmobile, but we made it. But yeah, thanks for having us here this afternoon. And we passed by your dog team, too, on the way. Tell me about your dog team.
I have eight right now. only six are running because two of them are pregnant. I let them follow, but they can't keep up, right? So.
And how often do you take them for a run?
Every day if I can. Try to. Every other day sometimes. Depends. Depends on the weather, too. How I'm feeling, right? Like, do I really want to do this? Yeah. Especially when it's cold, you know, like I was telling Sophia, one of the hardest things is when it's cold, you got to run the dogs regardless because they need to run. Like, they don't have dog houses like mine don't. And, I mean, it doesn't bother them, but they need to be run. Like, as long as these kind of dogs, as long as they're fed well and running, this weather doesn't bother them at all, like at all, but they have to run. If they're just sitting and not moving around, yeah, that's not good, like at all. They won't live, plain and simple, they'll freeze to death. But it's tough, it is. Feeding them, and I told Sophie and Tristan this, feeding them is tough. You have to prepare for it, right? And that's all part of it, right? Like, we're like keeping culture and all that. Like, I mean, you got to go seal hunting and all the rest of it, right? Like, you got to do all this stuff. And the way I see it, you take a small part out of the culture like that. And it's not a small part, but if you take some, then there's no real need to go and do that stuff all the time, right? You just don't do it, right? I really see how dog teams were really connected to, you know, culture, right? Like, it was central to what it was, right? Really, truly was. Like, you look now, like, when there's not many tuk-tuk around, right? Like, caribou. If you had to walk now to find something, like, to catch something, you're in serious trouble. Like, serious trouble. You know? It's, yeah.
And we just spent some time with Sophia, and you had a big part in her interest to get a dog team of her own. So take us back to when that started, and I guess just what were your impressions of a little girl wanting to start her own dog team?
Yeah. You know, I can't remember when she first came here, but she used to come all the time, and we'd go for dog team rides, and she was really into it, like really, really into it. I'll say this before I start talking. Everything I know that I've been teaching her, not my knowledge, right? This is stuff that was taught to me. I moved up here at a time when I was young, like a teenager, well, 1920. Everyone my age, like Enoch, Skidoo wanted to go fast. Me, I was interested in dog teaming. The older people, especially my Sakik and Kakak, my brother-in-law.
Sakik is your in-law?
Yeah. They were more than willing to teach me. Like anything I asked her, yeah, right? Anyone, any of the older people that used to have dog teams here were more than willing to show you stuff. They're really happy to see somebody younger get into it, right? Because, like, there used to be lots of dog teams here, maybe 20, 30, something like that. Mm-hmm. Like, there was lots.
So I just want to go back to that, John, because it must, like, what a privilege it must have been to learn from Inuit elders on how to carry on the tradition of dog teams.
It really, really was, you know, like, it's those kind of things, it's not written down, right? Like, if you do not pass that knowledge on, it's gonzo. It is not coming back. Like, you're not going to see it again. There's just no way. This is why, like, with Sophie and my nephew, Tristan, he got dogs from me. It's important to pass this stuff on to them so they know, like, how this stuff is. You don't see people doing this stuff in here in Rankin, you don't, right? One of the big things I noticed moving back is when people go hunting, like by Skidoo and that, it's not like it used to be. Like, we used to go out overnight, stay out, and then you come home. Yeah? Now, shoom, they'll drive all day back. right? And then, and I get it, you know, like they got to work, and I get it. But I mean, that ability and knowledge of how to stay out on the land, it's going, like it really truly is. They don't have that knowledge of how to do this stuff. And this, it's a big factor for me why I try and get younger people interested in it, right? It's like, you have to. If you don't, it's going to be gone. Plain and simple, it's as easy as that, right? What it really is a good way to keep culture alive. Because you look at when the dog slaughter happened. They did that to keep people who could look after themselves, to get it to where they didn't have the ability to look after themselves. I mean, that's what that was, right? I even remember my father-in-law was telling me once that he kept someone's dog, I can't remember who, kept someone's dog, like took some of their dogs because they were going to get rid of them, right? Like it's, so I mean, it's good that it's coming back. Like you look at Nunavut Quest and all that, right? Like that is something they need to start here, I believe, and get people back into it, right? Mm-hmm. Like they really do. Like we used to go hunting by dog team, all that stuff, right? Like me and my father-in-law and Kakak John, like we would go, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Staying in igloos, all that fun stuff, right? It's a really good way to travel, yeah. right?
You know, it's important to keep the tradition alive and to keep the knowledge of dog teaming going. How can that happen in today's world?
Well, it can. I mean, like it's. I wouldn't say it's harder, but it's definitely more time consuming for like younger people, right? I mean, like in today's world, you got to work, right? Like that's just the way it is. But if they're dedicated enough, right, you can run them at night and all that kind of stuff, right? But I mean, it's not just dog team, it's like clothing, all that stuff, right? Like, because, you know, like me and Judy, we've made lots of like caribou wind pants, all that stuff, like to stay warm going on the sled. And all that is because we have dogs, right? Like we would have never done that. See, I make, for like the lines for the dogs, is seal skin, right? Like the way they're hooked up, like on the harness, I make little ulu shape sort of things. We're like hooking them up, like no snaps, yeah. All that's made from antlers, all that stuff, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's that kind of thing that younger people don't know, you know, especially here, like because dogs have been gone here so long, they just don't know that, right? Like it's just, they just don't. And if it's the way I see it, if that is not reintroduced and people don't start getting into it, that knowledge is going to be gone. You know, you'll see it in a book nowadays or something like that, but to actually understand like how it is, you know, like older people, especially like my father-in-law, like I don't know anyone who was as good with dogs as him, right? Like it was, his dogs were just like out of this world, like just unreal.
So then, John, what is something that you can only learn by doing? Not teaching, but doing when it comes to your dog team.
I'll use Sophie as an example. You cannot learn how to handle dogs from a book, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. You just can't. Sophie is having a tough time. Her dogs will follow Skidoo and all that, right? Easy, like I see them all the time. But for them just to go on their own, like with no trail, no nothing, that she's struggling with. And it's not easy. And the only way you can learn that is doing it on your own. There is no do this, do that, because it's not, right?
I guess because it comes down to your voice and your commands, like your communication with the dog.
You, right? Like it's tough, right? And I mean, like, younger people, Tristan's the same way. And it's not, and this is part of the cultural thing, right? It's not, because I asked Sophie, you got a whip, right? I don't know if she does yet.
She actually does now. I saw it today, yeah.
And it's not mean. It's not like you're whipping the dog. That's not how it works. It's, you're like making a sound behind the dog or on the side of the dog to get them to do what you want. That is how you're going to teach them to get going on their own, right? And you got to be stern, not mean. You got to be very stern and got to be doing the same thing consistent all the time. Does not matter. Like when I was teaching these ones, oh, like frustration like you never seen. When I have problems out here, my brother-in-law, John, sees me, he's just laughing. Like he knows how it is. He's just killing himself laughing. And it's frustrating. I mean, you can't teach someone how to do that kind of stuff. You have to do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is, right?
What is it like for you to see Sophia with her dogs? Because, I mean, you got her interested in them. You helped her get a dog team going. So what's it like for you to see her get to where she's at today?
It's really good. It really makes me happy that she does that. Like, it really does to see her going. It'd be good to see her going without a Skidoo and that. But, I mean, that's coming. It's a learning thing, right? Like, once she gets that all figured out, then, yeah, it's that you don't worry about it no more, right? Once she gets that down to where she can travel without a Skidoo in front of her, and then if she gets more dogs, it's easy then, because then the dogs are teaching the dogs. Like, you're not really, you're just keeping them in order. That's it, right? But I think she'll get there. I know she will.
So how much longer do you think you'll be at it?
Till I can't do it. Yeah, until they're like, till I'm not physically capable of doing it, right? Yeah. Keeps you young. Keeps you moving. You got to keep moving, right? That's the way it is.
Well, thank you so much for telling us all about it today, John.
No problem. Thank you.
John McLeod owns a dog team. He lives in Rankin Inlet, Nunavut. This is Unreserved on CBC Radio 1, Sirius XM, U.S. Public Radio, and Native Voice 1. I'm Juanita Taylor in Rankin Inlet. Let's get back to the outskirts of town, where a team of very excited dogs are eager to greet Sophia Johnston.
There's a lake right in front of us. There's the town and a snow fence to the left of us, and their houses are pretty insulated. And then there's a cage with our table that we chop up their food on. And in the middle there's a tent with a house inside. That's where the puppies are.
Some kids dream about having a dog. Sophia dreamed about having a whole team. She's just 15 years old, but she already carries the responsibility of feeding, training, and caring for a growing team of sled dogs through storms, long days, and northern winters. Sophia spends a lot of time on the land, often with her dad, Kyle, and sometimes her mom, Rihanna, and brother, Miles, if they can make time in their very busy family schedule. I sat down with Sophia and Kyle in their home in Rankin Inlet.
I have loved dogs my entire life. I've really liked the idea of dog sledding, which is basically what I do. And we like to think of our dogs as pets. We've had them for a little while, but we're just going as it goes, we're just winging it, you know.
So you have a dog team. How many dogs do you have?
I have 9 dogs, but we've recently had puppies on maybe, I think it was Wednesday.
Oh, how many puppies?
3.
3 puppies.
Yes.
And what kind of dogs are they?
I think they're a mix of Siberian Husky and Eskimo dog, I think. Uh-huh. And then the puppies are a sort of a mix of something, and
they're a Rankin special.
Yeah.
Tell me about what got you interested in maintaining, owning, you know, your own dog team?
Well, I've heard stories about a lot of elders having dog teams, and it got me interested. So I kind of did my research on it. I read stories of there's races that people have books on. I've read a couple of those, and just the idea of having a lot of dogs.
It's quite interesting in the fact that, I mean, Rankin's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine a lot of teenagers your age are raising dog teams.
Yeah.
Talk about, like, the benefits it brings to you in your life.
I think I would rather do this than a lot of teenagers, because I like the challenge, and I like having to train my own dogs and having a lot of dogs love me, I guess.
Oh, but, I can imagine.
Yeah.
Do they get excited every time
super loud.
And see them?
Yeah. But it's a lot of work, and I get excited to see them every day, which I think is a benefit.
Well, they don't live around your house, so it is a lot of work. You've got to go and do you go and see them every day? Like, what's your usual routine with the dogs?
Well, my dad does like half of the work. Some days when I have sports or if I'm just not feeling it, he just goes out there and helps me out a lot. He's built like everything out there. We borrowed the houses from one of the elders that had a dog team like right around there. It's a lot of fun.
Okay, and so of course you're training to be a dog musher. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that part of it, like about the racing, and have you raced? Because I'm not sure, do they even have races and dog team races in Rankin anymore?
No, I think they stopped doing that because the people that used to do it got too old, or
right.
Their dogs weren't getting their care enough.
Okay.
I don't think there's enough people in Rankin right now to actually do a Rankin race.
Right.
But we have taken them out. You can milk soak to the cabin and then stake them out and overnight, and then go to another lake and go fishing for the day and feed them from what we catch and then go back to the cabin. And
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I remember, I don't know how many years ago it was, but like Christmas time, there would be dog team races to celebrate Christmas. Springtime, there was even, I don't know, there was like a time when it was a big thing here, dog team racing.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit sad to know that it's sort of dying off. But I mean, Sophia, with efforts like yours to keep a dog team going, I think it at least keeps that part of the traditional life. So talk to me about that, just why it's important to you as an Inuk to be able to raise dogs and to have your own dog team.
Yeah, so I think it's a really good tradition. It represents a lot of the hardships of being an Inuk and how they had to use their dogs and go hunting and stuff. And they train their dogs really good. Like, when there was a hunt going on, they weren't attacking them or being really loud. They could train them to be quiet or like do all these directions and stuff. But I think it's good because I'm young and I still love it, I think I could get a couple more people interested in it. It won't be the same, but I believe it's important to keep it
mm-hmm.
going.
Mm-hmm. What's that feeling you get when you're running the dogs?
I get really happy when they're working together and following directions, but I love the scenery and how peaceful it is. Like, my dad goes up quite a bit farther than them, and they just run at their own pace. It's really calming.
Mm, yeah.
A really big importance for me for supporting Sophia to have a dog team, and also for our family to have it, it's the work ethic to actually have a responsibility to take care of something out there. I grew up on acreage and a farm, and to have those chores and that responsibility, I think it's really important for that work ethic to be installed at a young age, and Sophie is doing an amazing job with it. Sometimes it's a lot harder than other times, like last year when you had puppies again. She camped out for 4 days with a little tent and slept with the dogs, and the mom came in and out, and they got pictures of that. I'd go and see her at 6:30 in the morning, and she'd be awake with the puppies in the tent. And
mm-hmm. So then, Kyle, for you as her dad, how have you seen her grow, you know, with all the responsibilities that she's been given to look after her dog team? How have you seen her grow?
Sophia's pretty remarkable. She's like a young lady. She can do her hair up. She'll go 1 minute from being out there shoveling up all the dog stuff to cleaning out houses to do herself right up and go and see some friends. Like, she's a very well-rounded young lady.
And you feel, as her dad, you feel because she's been given this responsibility to look after a dog team, it's helping her grow into a mature young woman.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so let's talk about your team now, Sophia. Tell me what their names are.
Okay, so the boys' names are Ukluk, which is grizzly bear, and Bullum, which I'm pretty sure means fat, but...
Chubby, yeah. Chunky, porky, yeah.
Yeah. The girls' names are Buyuk, Siti, Ganguduk, and Buddy.
And which one is your leader?
My leader is Siti.
Uh-huh.
She's kind of like the boss of everybody else. She's like the smallest one. She can't really run because she just had babies, but they're not as, they don't listen as well when she's not with them or around them, because they usually look up to her because she really puts them in their place and everything.
So when do you think she'll be able to join the team again?
I don't really know. Maybe in a week or two.
Oh, that's not too bad then.
Yeah.
She just has to get over this time of, I guess, recovery from having puppies to get back into the swing of things. So out of the whole team, which one has the biggest personality?
Definitely Bullum. He's like a big teddy bear, and he likes to talk a lot, talks back. He wasn't the best at the dog teaming thing because he would just like lay down and ask for love, but yeah, he's definitely our favorite.
Yeah, I guess you've had to teach him a couple things here and there to try to get him to be like an active part of the team.
Yeah, he's gotten more mature, but even after he's been spayed, he's calmed down a bit. Neutered. That's the word.
Yeah, that's an interesting part of this whole thing, because there's no vet in town. Right? So to get your dog spayed or neutered, or even if there's a medical emergency with the dogs, like, how do you manage that?
The fire department has access to a lot of medicine and dewormers and all the shots that the dogs need. We wait for the vets to come into town.
Oh, that's right. They come in once a year, is it?
Once a year, and it's quite pricey, $500, whether you're a male or a female, for spayed or neutered. Yeah, we just kind of manage like that. With that many dogs, like if a dog was to get sick, you'd have to just put it down. You couldn't afford to send them out every time, especially with the price of sending a dog back and forth now.
Hmm. And I understand you got interested from John McLeod. How did that happen?
I think he offered my dad for me to go out there and go on his dog team a couple times. I'll go there like every day after school. He has maybe 12 dogs. They're really big, but super friendly. Mm-hmm. It was really interesting because he had his own trail, and he would go up and down there, and the dogs listened really well. Just recently, he said they stopped running with a trail, like they didn't have to have a trail with them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was a really cool experience. He gave us our dogs, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was 6 of them.
Uh-huh.
We had 2 boys and 4 girls.
Mm-hmm.
I think 4 of them from one litter and 2 of them from another litter.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was when he had like maybe 10 to 15 dogs each, maybe. And it was a really big litter,
he had to get rid of them, I think.
He needed yeah. some help.
Yes.
Right.
He looks like your dream came true, eh?
Yeah. Yeah. Told him all about it.
Those
puppies. He had over 27 puppies that summer, and he called us while we were on holidays and said he's saving some for Sophia. Sophia would go down there, and sometimes she'd be gone for 4 hours or 5 hours, mm-hmm. and I'd call her and go, "Where are you?" "I'm just having tea with John." "Okay." "It's dark, you gotta come back." And he lives on the outside of town. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like, careful coming back, you know.
So what do you feed them?
When we go hunting, we usually feed them caribou or muskox if we get a whole bunch, but my dad goes netting maybe once or twice a week, mm-hmm. and he comes back with fish, and we feed them fish for a while, maybe half a fish each, one of the big ones. But if not, if we ran out of food with meat, then we feed them kibble, mm-hmm. the Inukshuk kibble. Mm-hmm. Gets expensive.
Maybe I bet.
3 days lasts us with one bag.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
So I guess you go out quite a bit to get fish and as much country food as you can to feed them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of work. It's every 2 to 3 days I'm out doing netting. So, and I also work full time. So you finish a full day of work, suit up, drive out. If everything goes well, you're back by 10 o'clock at night, have your supper and go to bed.
What a commitment.
Or if something doesn't go right, then you're back at midnight and you skip your supper. No.
It's a huge commitment on everybody. Like, it's not just you, Sophia, but it's not just you. It's like a whole commitment within the family.
It's the whole family, yeah. But yeah, it's a big commitment. Having the dogs, it takes up a lot of time.
Yeah.
Right. What's your favorite part, Kyle, about owning a dog team?
I like to keep busy, and I really love dogs too. That Bullum, he's my baby out there. If I miss 3 days or so and don't see him, I'll sit on his doghouse and he'll hug me and cry and mm-hmm. chat to me and mm-hmm. yeah. They're very affectionate dogs. They're more like pets than
working dogs, like yeah. the traditional working dog, I guess. Great. Was there anything else that you guys wanted to tell me about being the family of a dog team?
Maybe just the whole community has been really supportive over all of this. Like, whenever I need a hand and I don't know how to help Sophia with getting the dogs to turn or getting them to take off without trying to follow a machine, and there's always someone that's willing to help.
Right.
Yeah.
So then, Sophia, what's your hopes, your dreams in the future with your dogs? What do you hope to do with them?
My plan is to go to vet school and learn to be a vet and maybe even start a clinic here. Mm-hmm. And if I do that, then I could still have a dog team here and have it as a hobby and keep exercise, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe interest a few other young kids about it, teach them about it. If I get the experience.
You're not sure yet, but what you do know is that you do want to keep doing it well into your future.
Yes.
Yep. Yep. Come on. Yep.
Sophia Johnston is Inuk, living in Rankin Inlet. She and Kyle Johnston are a father-daughter team of mushers. That's all our time on Radio Indigenous. This episode was produced by Kim Kasher, Amanda Geer, Elena Hutchins-Lyle, and Rhiannon Johnson. And I'm Juanita Taylor, in for Rosanna Deerchild, coming to you from Rankin Inlet, Nunavut. Ublikut charit.